Okay, good.
Om Sahana Vavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Sahavidyan Karava Vahai, Tejasvinavadhi Tamastu Mavidvisha Vahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. We'll chant together. Chaitanyam sarvagam sarvam sarva bhuta guhashayam yat sarva vishayatitam tasmai sarva vide namaha.
Very good. Welcome back. We're meeting after we missed a class due to Deepavali celebrations, so we have some, we don't have catching up to do, except in a sense, in one manner we do. There's quite a number of questions that have come in by email, and perhaps it would be good just to very briefly go through these questions. Now, usually when one person has a question, it suggests that other people may have the same question. We'll go through these fairly quickly, and then we'll pick up the thread where we left off. First question, and these questions are also a little bit revealing of some problems that students sometimes have. Once a person dies, does that same person or thing, due to lack of a proper word, get a new birth until that thing doesn't get mukti? So we need better language. And this really shows the importance of this style of teaching. And this style, of course, is what I received from my guru. And it's a style that makes extensive use of Sanskrit terminology, technical terms, which give us a tremendous amount of clarity. If we fail to use this basic vocabulary of Sanskrit terms and define those terms very carefully, we won't have any clarity in our communication. For example, if I talk about the soul that travels in response to his question, problem is the word soul is understood differently by different people and very differently in different religious traditions. So to use the word soul would cause tremendous confusion here. Is soul Atma? But then Atma doesn't travel. So anyway, the simple answer is let's use proper terminology. And many of you have heard in prior classes, we distinguish between physical body called sthula sharira, the subtle body that enlivens the physical body called sukshma sharira, non-physical body. And we distinguish those two from Atma, consciousness, because of which the whole thing functions. And as I just said, consciousness doesn't travel, Atma doesn't travel, because it's all pervasive. It can't travel, it's already there, so to speak. The traveling entity is concerned with the sukshma sharira, the subtle body. And if this is unfamiliar to you, there's a video on one of my videos addresses this issue. I think the title is Reincarnation, Who Travels? So that would be good to, if you're not clear about these terms, sthula sharira, sukshma sharira, if those terms are not clear to you, then go and look at that video. Next. In an earlier class, we talked about mumukshu and jignyasu. Mumukshu is one who seeks moksha, liberation, and a mumukshu gets converted into a jignyasu, one who seeks spiritual wisdom. That conversion takes place when you understand that liberation is a result of gaining spiritual knowledge, which is to say, bondage is due to ignorance. Before you understand bondage is due to ignorance, you are a mumukshu. After you understand bondage is due to ignorance, you become a jignyasu. And those are preceded, we don't often use this term, but those two are preceded by a prior state in which you are a bubukshu. A bubukshu is one who seeks worldly pleasure. As long as you think you can find absolute contentment and peace in the world through your worldly efforts, you remain a bubukshu. When you understand that worldly efforts will never bring you lasting contentment and peace, then you become a mumukshu. And then when you discover that suffering is ultimately due to ignorance of your true nature as Satchitananda Atma, then you become a jignyasu. The question is whether one can be a bubukshu, a mumukshu, and a jignyasu at the same time. Interesting question. And the answer is no, and here's the reason. There's always a first priority in life. If your first priority in life is worldly pleasure, you're a bubukshu. If your first priority in life is gaining freedom from suffering, you are a mumukshu. If your first priority in life is gaining the spiritual wisdom taught by the ancient rishis, which will put an end to that suffering, then you are a jignyasu. So you can't be all three simultaneously because there's only one first priority. So you examine your own life, and you'll very easily figure out which category. All right, next question. Shankara is fairly critical of ritualism in this section. In this section of the text, so the question is: Could we say that performing rituals add an emotional edge to one's spiritual practice? Please understand that Sri Shankara is not criticizing rituals in general, but rather he's criticizing the attempt to use rituals to gain moksha. Shankara teaches, not in this chapter, but elsewhere, he teaches extensively that rituals prepare you. They bring antakarana shuddhi, purity of mind and heart, which are essential for as preparation. Rituals are essential for the sake of gaining the purity of heart and mind needed. I won't say essential. Some form of bhakti, devotion, is essential for the sake of gaining the necessary preparation to gain liberation, moksha, and rituals are certainly helpful in that regard. So don't misunderstand Shankara here. We're only looking at one chapter. If you want to understand Shankara, you have to read everything he's written. Okay. Next. Shankara says ignorance of one's own true self is what causes us to get stuck in the samsara chakra, as we saw in prior verses. The question is, who is the I which is ignorant of this fact? Who is ignorant? For whom is ignorance? Let's be very clear. Atma has no ignorance. Atma is Satchitananda Atma, pure consciousness, utterly unaffected by anything in the world, anything associated with your body, and anything associated with your mind. Ignorance doesn't affect Atma, consciousness. Who does ignorance affect? Shankara, actually, in one of his commentaries, he says very cleverly, to whom does ignorance belong? He gives a one-word answer, prashtuhu, means it belongs to the one who asked the question. When you say... And that's true, because the one who is asking a question is associated with a body and a mind. Ignorance has its locus where? In the mind. So where the problem lies, there lies the solution. Last question. We were talking about superimposition, and this will be a topic also in today's class. And we talked about anyonya adhyasa, mutual superimposition, which is to say that I superimpose my sense of selfhood, and I use the word I-ness. I superimpose my I-ness on the body and mind. When I say I am male or I am old, then I'm actually superimposing I on the physical body, which is not I, it's a thing. And just like this chair is a thing, this body is a thing, there's not that much difference between. There is difference between the two, but they're both things. They're both clearly not I, but due to ignorance, we superimpose I-ness on the body. And then reversely, we superimpose the traits of the body on I. When we say that, when, like as I said, when I say I am old, in fact, in that statement, I am old or I am male, both are present. I-ness is attributed to the body, and the qualities of the body are attributed to the true self, Atma, Satchidananda. That side is a little bit more apparent when you say, I am sad. This is a better example. When I am sad, I fundamentally am consciousness. Sadness is known by consciousness. The sadness which belongs to the mind is superimposed on consciousness. You remember the example I've given for this so many times. Orangeness doesn't belong to the crystal. We superimpose the orangeness that belongs to the cloth, gets superimposed on the crystal. The crystal remains utterly clear and unaffected by the orangeness of the cloth. In the same way, your true nature as pure consciousness, Satchidananda Atma, remains utterly unaffected, untainted by sadness or anything else in your mind. But when you say, I am sad, you're making that mistake. Superimposition, adhyasa. You're superimposing the sadness of the mind gets superimposed on consciousness, which is free from sadness, just like the orangeness of the cloth gets superimposed on the crystal, which is free from orangeness. But now, there's a problem with language. When I said, I-ness belongs to Atma, this surprised me because I identified I-ness with the ahankara. So there's a language problem. I've many times described ahankara as the sense of I-ness. And this is where the confusion comes about. I-ness literally means the quality of being I. The quality of being I means me in a fundamental sense. I-ness in the sense of the sense of being I, the quality, the nature of being I, that ness affix. The nature of being I doesn't belong to the body, doesn't belong to the mind and senses. The nature of being I belongs to Atma and Atma alone. So we would use I-ness in that very fundamental sense, the state of being I. True I belongs to Atma. But many times I've used the word I-ness with regard to the ahankara, and this is a language problem. I've always said sense of I-ness, feeling of I-ness. Right now, you feel like an individual person. And that's a little abstract, so the best way to understand it is to contrast that with a time when you didn't feel like an individual person. A good example of that is listening to your favorite music and getting lost in that music. Who gets lost in the music? not consciousness. You still hear the music. The true I does not get lost in the music. You still hear the music. The one who gets lost in the music is what we call ahankara, ego, and I use the term sense of I-ness to describe that ego, the feeling of being an individual person. So I-ness, as the word literally means, the state of being the true I, belongs to Atma. But the feeling of I-ness, the feeling of being an individual being, comes and goes. Goes away when you're absorbed in music, goes away at night in deep sleep, right? In deep sleep, you don't feel like I am. That feeling, I am, is gone in deep sleep. So let's differentiate between I-ness and the feeling of I-ness. I-ness refers to Atma, your true self. The feeling of I-ness is this ahankara. Okay, those were good questions. And if you have other questions, you can email them. Also, we'll be starting some satsang immediately after this class. We'll talk about that later. Let's return to our text. We're going to pick up the thread with verse 19. There we go. And before we see verse 19, can you turn the light on? I want to go to the board. Actually, I won't go to the board. I just want you to see this. This is our current topic, jnana, karma, samuchaya. Samuchaya, the combination of jnana, wisdom, knowledge, and karma, action. And this is a wrong teaching, which Shankara is analyzing and dismissing. It is a teaching that says, if you don't do your required rituals, even if you try to get this knowledge, it won't work. You will never get liberation unless you continue to do your required rituals. This is a very big argument in Shankara's time. It may be less so today. But the point he is making reveals something about how knowledge brings about liberation. So he makes three arguments here. Actually, the Purva Pakshi, the opposing point of view, has three arguments. The first argument is that rituals are sahakari. They help knowledge make you liberated. That's what I just said. If you fail to do your rituals, you won't get enlightened. Second argument is vihita. Those rituals are enjoined by the Vedas. The same Vedas that teach you to seek this knowledge for the sake of liberation, those same Vedas tell you to do rituals. So if you're going to follow one part of the Vedas that says seek knowledge, why don't you follow the other part of the rituals that says do rituals? And we'll see that argument actually in our next class. Today's class will be focused on the first argument. The last argument we'll see another time. It's also related to the rituals. Okay. So with that introduction, let's return to verse 19 and pick up the thread. Na ched bhuya prasuyeta, na ched bhuya prasuyeta, karta bhokte tidhi katam, karta bhokte tidhi katam, sarasmi ticha vijnane, sarasmi ticha vijnane, tasmad vidya sahayika, tasmad vidya sahayika. In our previous class, we introduced this topic that when knowledge destroys ignorance, and ignorance here we're talking about a specific kind of ignorance. Ignorance meaning, to use my guru's term, non-recognition of your true self. That ignorance. non-recognition of your true self. As a result of that ignorance, then comes the superimposition. You identify yourself with your body and mind, and once you identify yourself with your body and mind, problems are endless. Because the problems of your body and mind are endless. Well, actually, the problems come to an end, but then you get reborn and they start all over again. Anyway, that's another topic, reincarnation. Here, when that ignorance is removed, ignorance being removed means you discover your true nature to be Satchidananda Atma. You recognize, I am not this body. When I say recognize, not in a conceptual way. You all get it conceptually. Anything known to you is not you. The chair is known. We do this. The arm of the chair is known to you. It is not me. This arm is known to me. Therefore, it's equally not me. Whether it's the arm of the chair or the arm on my body, they're both known to me. They're not me. That's conceptual. That's just based on pure logic. The logic is absolutely valid, but that logic isn't enough. What is enough is when you discover I am unchanging, all-pervasive consciousness. How can I be this arm? You see how that works? Very different. One is logic. This arm of the chair is known to me, therefore it's not me. This arm is known to me, therefore it's not me. That's use of logic. Logic is very important. It's not enough. What is enough is the actual discovery. I am a conscious being. A conscious being who is unborn, uncreated, boundaryless, vast, limitless, and utterly unaffected by any and all worldly troubles. When you make that discovery, looking within with the help of these teachings, then having made that discovery, it's pretty obvious that this appendage is not me. So that's what I mean by the discovery, by the removal of ignorance. And as we said in a prior class, once that ignorance is removed, it doesn't come back. It's not like you forget who you are. You have an that which is destroyed doesn't come back into existence. Ignorance, having been destroyed, ignorance is characterized as a veil, metaphorical veil, covering your true nature. When that metaphorical veil is destroyed, when it's removed, it doesn't come back. And that's what's discussed here. Na ched bhuyaha prasuyeta, if that ignorance doesn't come back, prasuyeta, if it doesn't arise again, then katam, how, and end of the second line, then how could there be dihi, the thinking, the conclusion that I am a karta, an agent of action, or I am a bhokta, an experiencer of the world. There's a lot that's being said here. Let me try to unpack it for you. When you're identified with the body and mind, you become an agent of action. Who came here to class? Pure consciousness doesn't drive a car. So the you identified with your body and mind comes to class. Who is listening to this class? Pure consciousness doesn't have ears. The one who is listening to the class, one who is experiencing this class, is that to be the one who drove to class, karta, to be the one who is listening to this class and experiencing it, bhokta, these two words in his verse, these two conditions arise due to identification with your body and mind. Only when you're identified with your body and mind can you drive a car. Only when you're identified with your body and mind can you be a student in this class. When that identification comes to an end, you, in your true nature, as pure consciousness, you no longer drive a car. Car still gets driven, but you don't drive the car. Your body and mind are still here in this class after enlightenment. After enlightenment, it will make a silly argument. If Swamiji, you said, after enlightenment, you're no longer identified with your body and mind, so how can you drive a car? Does it mean enlightened people can't drive cars? Enlightened people can't sit in a class. We need to understand what happens in this loss of false identification. That's our topic, right? You're falsely identified with the body and mind. I'm just looking for a metaphor. I don't get a better metaphor. And this is subtle, a little hard to convey. Let me try to convey it in first person. As pure consciousness, I'm not teaching. Teaching takes place, absolutely. Thinking takes place. Experience takes place. But it's very clear to me that teaching and experience belongs to the mind and not to me, the conscious observer of that mind. Teaching is a mental process. To experience is a mental process. These are all mental activities. When they're known as mental activities, and you know that you are independent of those mental activities, then the activities can go on without the identification. So teaching continues, but I can honestly say, in my true nature as Satchidananda Atma, I don't teach. In my true nature as Satchidananda Atma, that I doesn't do anything. That I is pure consciousness, the so-called inner divinity. So that's what this verse is saying, that when this ignorance is removed, that metaphorical veil of ignorance covering your true self, when ignorance is destroyed, it doesn't come back. And if in the absence of this ignorance, then that identification with the body and mind don't come back. Identification with the body and mind includes being a driver of a car, being a student in a class, being a karta agent, being a bhokta experiencer. These wrong conclusions don't come back. You know that you are pure consciousness, independent of all these mental activities. What is your understanding in the third line? Sad asmi iti cha vijnane. This occurs vijnane when you have this specific understanding. What is the understanding? Sat asmi iti. Asmi, I am sat, that reality. I am pure existence, pure consciousness, without boundary, without limit. This understanding, sat asmi, I am that reality, cha vijnane. When this knowledge occurs, then the identification with the body and mind come to an end. And along with the loss of identification comes the absence of suffering. Because just to make it very obvious, when you're identified with the body, the problems of your body become your problems. When you're identified with the mind, the problems of the mind become your problems. Body and mind will always have problems, will continue to be a source of suffering as long as you're identified with it. Tasmat, therefore, Shankara concludes, vidya asahayika. Therefore, vidya, knowledge, this particular knowledge that removes the veil of ignorance, is asahayika, negating the first of those three arguments. Knowledge does not require the assistance of action. And just to make Shankara's comment a little bit clearer, knowledge does not require the assistance of action. The point he said is that Atma is actionless. So if you can appreciate the irony, to gain knowledge of actionless Atma, will action help? Will action help you gain knowledge of actionless Atma? This is Shankara's argument, which is a little abstract. Let me put it in more concrete terms. The example we've given so many, the typical, very Vedantic example of ignorance is when you're walking down that dark alley and you see the snake. Of course, there's no snake, it's a rope, but in the semi-darkness of the alley, that rope looks like a snake. Your ignorance of the rope allows you to superimpose a snake. You can see why it's such a widely used metaphor. Just like your ignorance of your true self allows you to superimpose being a driver and being a student and everything else in life. So this is our basic metaphor. So here's the idea. If you see that snake in the dark alley, how will action help get rid of it? If you take a big stick and vigorously beat on that rope snake, will that help? The problem is ignorance. Ignorance of the rope. Beating it, action is not going to remove that ignorance. Further, as long as you're busy beating that rope snake, your commitment to that action is an impediment to gaining knowledge that it's not a snake at all. Your effort to beat the snake gives reality to it. You endow that snake with a reality it doesn't deserve. And that's the problem of action in general. If you think your worldly actions can lead you to perfect contentment, you're still beating the snake. If you think rituals can lead you to some heavenly liberation, you're still beating the snake. So Shankara's argument here is give up those actions because those actions are actually impediments to gaining knowledge. And if they're impediments to knowledge, how can they be helpful? This is his argument. This is the opposing points of view, is that action is sahakari. Actions are helpful. Shankara turns it around and says, they're not helpful. They're impediments. Okay, enough. Let us proceed. Atyare chayarit yukto nyasa shrutata hevahi
Nyasa Shrutyata Hevahi Karmebhya Manasantebhya Karmebhyo Manasantebhya Etavadati Vajinam Etavadati Vajinam.
Let's step our discussion up a level. We're going to have a meta discussion. Meta discussion means you discuss the topic from a broader point of view. What is a broader point of view here? We're talking about how you get enlightened. And we talked about the use of logic. This chair is known to me, therefore it's not me. This body is known to me, therefore it's not me. We use logic. Shankara has used lots of logic in this prior verse. We also use anubhava. We use logic, yukti. We use anubhava, experience. Previously, as said, you turn your attention within and you discover personally, immediately, directly, that you are indeed this unborn, unchanging, limitless consciousness, anubhava. So we have these three, let me go to the board and just remind you of these three important terms. And these are the three primary, room here, yeah. These are the three primary sadhanas, means that we use for liberation. And they are called Shruti, scripture, Yukti, logic, and Anubhava, experience. We require all three. Leave any one of these out, and what remains doesn't work. For example, if you leave out Shruti, this is like the roadmap. How can you leave out the roadmap? The instruction. You need someone to guide you, and the scriptures are our source of guidance. If you leave out yukti, logic, then it becomes blind faith in the scriptures. Blind faith, actually, we've discussed at length. Blind faith is a problem, not a value here. So we need yukti. We need to understand. We need to clarify our understanding using logic. And anubhava, experience. If you leave out anubhava, all of this is theoretical, useless. So we require all three of these. And the reason I'm pointing that out is we're making a transition with this verse. So far, we've been talking, Shankara has been using a lot of yukti, a lot of reasoning. I've introduced some principles of anubhava, experience. Now, Shankara turns his attention to Shruti, scripture. So having used a lot of yukti, logic, Shankara now turns his attention to Shruti, scripture, and he gives in this verse two scriptural references that support renunciation of action. Now, when I say renunciation of action, a very common understanding of renunciation of action is to become a monk and to renounce worldly life. But here in this text, Shankara is taking renunciation of action in a much more profound sense, in a very fundamental sense. He's talking about renunciation of doership, renunciation of kartratva, renunciation of the identification with your body and mind that leads you to be an agent of action. So he's taking this renunciation in a very fundamental sense, and he's giving us here some scriptural support now for the importance of renunciation. Again, not renunciation in the sense of renouncing worldly life and becoming a monk, but renunciation in this fundamental sense. Renunciation of the false identification with the body and mind which give rise to the sense of being an agent of action. So in that very fundamental sense. By the way, in the Bhagavad Gita, this is a major topic in chapter 5. You can go and study chapter 5 if you want to see this further. Anyway, he gives first scriptural reference. You may not know these references. First is from the Mahanarayana Upanishad. That's what the reference is. And by the way, I don't recognize it. That's why we study with commentaries. So the commentator points out that this quote is from the Mahanarayana Upanishad. And Shankara only gives one word here. Atyarechayat. One word quotation. From that one word quotation, we have to figure out what the reference is to. So the commentator fills in the expression. He says, Nyasa eva atyarechayat is the full quote from the Mahanarayana Upanishad. Atyarechayat is a participle that means to excel. To excel. What excels? And Shankara doesn't quote that in the verse, but the commentator says, Nyasa eva atyarechayat. Nyasa means sannyasa, means renunciation. Renunciation excels is the scriptural reference. And I should point out this Mahanarayana Upanishad is much better known for another quotation which has the same meaning. So I'll chant it. A few of you will recognize this quote, this verse, because it's often chanted during rituals. It's chanted when you receive a sadhu. Anyway, the quotation is, Om na karmana na prajaya dhanena tyagena eke amritatva manushuhu. Few of you have heard that before. Eke anashuhu at the end. Some of those ancient some people, aka anashuhu, enjoyed amritatvam, immortality. Some enjoyed immortality, meaning some became enlightened. Some gained moksha. How? Beginning of the mantra goes, na karmana. Even if you don't know Sanskrit, that's pretty obvious. Not through karma. And karma in both senses. Not through your worldly efforts will you ever gain perfect peace and contentment, nor through the extensive performance of rituals will you ever gain perfect peace and contentment. Na karmana, na prajaya, prajaya, children. Not through your children. Now, this can also be taken in several ways. In ancient times, it was believed that after you die, your children, in fact, three generations of your progeny, are supposed to do rituals on your behalf to bless you after you die. And if you don't have children, you're out of luck. So this was a concept in ancient times. Definitely few people will have that perspective today. But but that was definitely prevalent at that time. But in modern times, a lot of people think, in my old age, my children will take care of me. Kind of the same idea, right? And has the same conclusion. If you don't have children, you're out of luck. So here, this quotation says, some gained moksha, enlightenment, liberation, na karmana, not through action, not through rituals, not through worldly efforts, na prajaya, not through progeny, children, na dhanena. Boy, what a good message for modern times, nor through wealth. You cannot buy, you cannot purchase contentment and inner peace. You don't need to hear me say this, you know it very well, but that was recognized in ancient times as well. Nadhanena. You cannot buy your way out of suffering, out of a life of suffering. So, nakarmana, not through action, and that's our current topic, right? So, actions will not help you gain enlightenment. Nakarmana, na prajaya, progeny will not help you gain enlightenment. Na dhanena, and wealth will not help you. You can't buy your way into perfect contentment. Then how did those few people in ancient times gain enlightenment, gain liberation? Tyagena, tyagenaike. Tyagena, we'll say tyagena eva. Through renunciation alone. Not through action, not through progeny, not through wealth, but through renunciation. And renunciation will, in this case, has both senses. Renunciation in the sense of turning your attention from the world and focusing on spiritual growth. That might involve, as it did for me, it might involve some rituals and a ritually taking to the life of being a monk, but it need not include this kind of ritual renunciation. We've talked about becoming a mumukshu before. We all start out as bubukshus. Bubukshu is one who seeks pleasure. When you recognize that no matter how much pleasure you gain in worldly life, it will never be enough, it will never last, you will never have lasting contentment and perfect peace. With that recognition, you become a mumukshu. To become a mumukshu, you've already renounced worldly life in one sense. You've renounced worldly life in the sense that you recognize no amount of worldly effort will bring you lasting peace and contentment. That's a kind of renunciation. That renunciation is signified perhaps by this lifestyle and these robes, but you need not have this lifestyle and these robes to have that understanding. That understanding is the tyaga, the renunciation spoken of here, the recognition that worldly life efforts and worldly life will never bring you lasting peace and contentment. So these are the quotations from the Maha Narayana Upanishad. And actually the word nyasa is here. Yeah. Atyarechayat iti uktaha. Thus it is said in the Maha Narayana Upanishad, nyasaha. And that nyasa is actually part of the quotation, even though it's not included above. Nyasa means sannyasa, means renunciation. So renunciation is superior. Shrutya, by the shruti, this was said. Ataha evahi. Therefore, going back to our argument on the board, therefore, the first argument, sahakari, actions cannot be helpful because the scriptures also say that renunciation excels. Renunciation is better than being fixated on karma. So this is the argument Shankara gives. And then he explains a little bit. So renunciation excels compared to what? In the third line, karmebhyaha, compared to karma. Compared to karma, renunciation is better. What kinds of karmas? Manasa antebhyaha, actions ending with manasa. That's like a short, in English when we use etc, which is a short form of the Latin etc, and so on. So this is our Sanskrit etc. And the Sanskrit etc means you have to include that which ends in manasa are three kinds of action. Some actions are kayika, of the body. Some actions are vachika, of the speech. Some actions are manasa, of the mind. So Shankara here clarifies it, that compared to actions of your body, speech, and mind, renunciation of action is better. And again, the renunciation of here means to renounce the world in the sense that you recognize the impossibility of gaining perfect peace and lasting contentment through worldly activities. So this is the first quote. Then comes one more quote, and we'll end our class with the second quote. Etavat iti vajinam. Actually, the quote ends on the first half of the next verse. So let's just see the first half. Let me explain this part. First of all, etavad iti vajinam. Vajinam means belonging to, it's a little obscure expression, belonging to the Vajanasena Upanishad, belonging to the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. So now he's quoting, this is a scholarly shorthand, is what Shankara uses here. So he uses scholarly shorthand to refer to the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, which says, etavat iti, another one-word quote, and we'll just see the remaining part of the quote in the first half of the next verse. Amritatvam shutam tasmat, amritatvam shutam tasmat, tyajam karma mumukshubihi. Tyajam karma mumukshubihi. Second half is a different topic, so we'll just leave it there. So the whole quote here, actually it's very, the quote occurs, let me just back up. The quote occurs in one of the most powerful teaching passages in the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. It's the point where the Rishi Yajnavalkya is about to renounce worldly life. So this is our topic, renunciation. And Yajnavalkya, by the way, you may not know this, most of the rishis were married. Did you know that? They were. In fact, Yajnavalkya was doubly married. He had two wives, which apparently was okay at that time. So he had two wives, Katyayani and Maitreyi. And he told them, I'm going to renounce the world. Katyayani was really concerned about getting her share of his wealth so that she could take care of himself. But his other wife, Maitreyi, said, why are you going away? He said, so I can gain moksha. I want to pursue spiritual knowledge full time. And she said, I want to do that too. And she made Yajnavalkya, her husband, this great rishi, she insisted that before he leaves, he had to teach her everything he knew about spiritual life. And so then in that context, Yajnavalkya teaches Maitreyi, his wife, this profound, profound spiritual teaching. And one of the most profound things he says, he taught was, Atma va are drashtavyaha. The true self, he said, are, O dear one, the true self, drashtavyaha, must be seen, must be discovered. How? Shrotavyaha, with the help of the scriptures. Mantavyaha, with the help of logic. Nididhyasitavyaha, with the help of anubhava. That's what we just said. I'll go back to the board. So shrotavyaha, with the help of shruti. Mantavyaha, with the help of logic. And nididhyasitavyaha, with the help of contemplation, with the help of anubhava. He gave that message to his wife, Maitreyi. But the quote follows that. And here's where the quote comes. And the commentator gives a quote in full. Shankara only gives us a couple of words here. The quote in full is, Maitreyi, oh, my dear wife, Maitreyi, etavat are, oh dear one, etavat this much, kalu, indeed, amritatvam leads to immortality. And that amritatvam, immortality, is like a scriptural code word for freedom from suffering, enlightenment, moksha, liberation. Etavat iti is what Shankara quotes. This much alone gives you enlightenment. This much what? Well, first of all, Yajnavalkya is on his way out the door. So the context of his words here are in the context of renunciation. Again, not necessarily renunciation as a lifestyle, but renunciation as the recognition of the impossibility of gaining perfect peace and contentment through worldly efforts, that renunciation. Secondly, he says, etavaditi, this much alone. And he's now referring to his earlier statement, atmavare drashtavyaha. You have to discover your true self, your true nature. And remember what I said before, as long as you're so busy beating the snake, you're preoccupied and you won't gain knowledge, it's not a snake at all. In the same way, as long as you are preoccupied trying to gain pleasure in life, that preoccupation is an obstacle for you to gain moksha. And that's what he says here. Etavaditi vajinam in the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. It is said that, and then just to finish off this second part in the next verse. So that amritatvam shutam, that immortality that you gain through renunciation of the world for the sake of knowledge, that renunciation of the world for the sake of knowledge, shrutam, has been taught in the scriptures. Tasmat, Shankara concludes, tyajyam karma. Actions are to be renounced, umukshubihi, by seekers of moksha. Actions are to be renounced by seekers of moksha. Why? As I said, if you're preoccupied beating the snake, how can you discover it's a rope? You need to be told it's a rope. It's too dark in the alleyway to see for yourself. Someone has to tell you, hey, it's not a snake. But when you're so busy beating the snake, you won't listen to someone who wants to tell you that it's not a snake at all. In the same way, if you are preoccupied, and you're not, but one who is preoccupied in worldly pursuits, trying to gain pleasure, trying to string moments of pleasure, you're trying to string them into some continuous flow of contentment and peace. Will you ever get there? Will you ever be able to line everything up in your life just right so that you enjoy perfect contentment and peace? You might line everything up for a few hours or a few days maximum, but before long, things will go wrong. So this is Shankara's point here. Based on these scriptural references also, he's already given you the logic. Now he's saying, in addition to that logic, based on these scriptural references, you should renounce this, let me call it an obsession with trying to gain pleasure through worldly life. That obsession is what the obstacle is. If you enjoy Starbucks coffee, go ahead and enjoy it. But it's the obsession. It's the conclusion that somehow, if you try hard enough, you can gain perfect peace and contentment through worldly life. That conclusion is the problem. We have to come out of that conclusion, come out of that wrong thinking. Okay, that's a good place to conclude today. We'll end with our prayers. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinah, Sarve Santu Niramayah, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Ma Kashchid Dukha Bhag Bhavet, Asato Ma Sadgamaya, Tamaso Ma Jyotirgamaya, Mrityorma Amritangamaya. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om Tat Sat.